is Wyman and Bob.
On Seattle Sports Station. Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com. Wyman on his way. Not yet, I think. This afternoon, they're leaving to Germany. He's preparing. He's packing.
That's a series in its own right.
He's packing all his Lederhosen, and he's going to be ready to do business out there in Germany. So he's off today. We got Thumb in, Mike Lefko hanging out. We got Jim Haslett joining us in studio today. Jim Haslett is the new head coach of your Seattle Sea Dragons of the XFL. How about that? So we'll talk to him coming up at 2:30. He'll join us in person. Former Saints head coach. It'd be good to talk to him. Also, John Morosi will join us at 5 o'clock today. A little preview on what's coming, which will be free agency starting tomorrow. How about that? Baseball free. I can't wait. I can't wait for this.
I'm looking forward to a normal offseason. And we haven't had that in a couple of years. And the lockout really was just a drain. And pretty tough because we truly did not know when or if baseball was going to come back. And it had that prolonged gap where you built up the excitement. The Mariners signed Robbie Ray right before the lockout and then just nothing. So yeah. Now to know that we can build consistently to spring training, it's going to be a really fun couple of months.
Well, yeah, I'll be interested to see what the pace is like compared to last year because there was that urgency to get some things done prior to the lockout, as we saw and you just brought up. But, you know, is it going to be much more deliberate? Is it going to be a much slower sort of trickle effect, especially when it comes to the big names, Aaron Judge and Trey Turner and some of those names that are out there? It's going to be interesting. So we'll talk about that with Morosi. Also, we're going to be doing something that'll involve you guys. We're going to preview likely free agents that the Mariners should go after. And what we're going to do is we're going to crowdsource. You guys text in some names of you feel like are realistic names that the Mariners should legitimately make an attempt to acquire, that they should go after. And what we're going to do is bring on a person from that city, whatever. We'll just throw Aaron Judge out as an example. So we'll get their version of Shannon Dreyer or, you know, Ryan Divish or somebody who's an insider in the New York media to come on and join us and talk about that particular player. Talk about Judge. Talk about if we want to talk about Nimmo from the Mets, we can get somebody on to talk about that. If we want to talk about Trey Turner, we can get somebody on that covers the Dodgers. So we're going to do that each day starting, I think, on the 21st. Which will be a short week because that's Thanksgiving week. So we'll go like the first 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday that week, and then the full next week after that. So one a day, we'll preview free agents. And we're going to get a collection of names, and some of those names might drop off the board. They might sign before we get to them, so we'll have a backup name. We'll narrow it down to like eight prominent names we feel are realistic, get a little preview from each of those cities, and some insight as to whether they're going to be a good fit here, not a good fit here. Because a lot of these guys, you're just kind of looking at stats. You're not really clear on what kind of guy they are in the clubhouse. As we've learned, that can be problematic. Jesse Winker. So, you know, you've got to get some insight on these guys. I think it's going to be pretty cool. For the baseball fan, it's going to be a cool thing. So we'll do one a day, little hot stove talk and preview potential targets for your Seattle Mariners.
Outside of the obvious ones, too. We want more than just Judge and, like you said, all those short stuff, because we'll talk about them. We'll get guys on to talk about it. But if there's someone that is of particular interest, then throw it out there, and we'll try to be as comprehensive as possible.
Yeah. We'll. You don't have to text in Judge or Trey Turner or Correa or Xander Bogaerts, because we'll do those guys. But who are some of the other ones? And Nimmo's one of those names that Morosi brought up. Our buddy Luke Arkins likes him as well. Not that familiar with him. I've looked at his numbers. Couldn't tell you a ton about him as, you know, firsthand watching him. We're not watching a lot of Met games out here, Mike. So, but names like that are going to be interesting because I don't think Jerry and the staff are just targeting nothing but big time, you know, high price tag free agents out there. I think it's going to hopefully be a mix. I hope they do go after one of the big guys, but I think they'll, you know, sprinkle in some other, maybe some veteran bats, veteran players, maybe some players we're not talking about or certainly not the headline guys, if you will.
By the way, a lot of these guys you just mentioned,
yeah,
all Scott Boras clients, and apparently he was holding court today in front of the reporters at the GM meeting, so I'll be interested to hear John Morosi's thoughts on that. He had some flowing adjectives to describe all of his guys, his shortstops, Carlos Correa and Xander Bogaerts. He made a Finding Nemo joke for Brandon Nimmo, so it's going to be an elongated process if you're trying to sign a Scott Boras client.
Yeah, I saw two things from him today. Well, I saw one that was interesting, and our buddy Luke Arkins retweeted it, and that was he had a quote, something along the lines of, "No, there have been no teams that have talked about any of my clients moving to second base." And he's got Correa, and I think he's got Swanson.
Bogarts, too.
Is it Bogarts? Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So a couple of, the bigger name available shortstops out there, and that sort of flies in the face of what Jerry had said about, we'd like to find a shortstop who wants to play second base. So we'll see. We'll see how that game goes. But, text in any names. If you're a baseball fan and there's a player out there you think the Mariners should absolutely be targeting that's realistic, text that name in. 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. So we've got time. We'll start that on the 21st. Again, some of these names may come off the board before then. We'll see. But we'll have a good collection. We'll go through a number of names, get everybody up to speed on who these guys are. So that's coming up. You can text those in whenever you'd like. Coming up, as I said, Jim Haslett will join us, John Morosi. But there seems to be, some steam behind Pete Carroll's comments about Geno Smith using the wristband and, some looking at it as it's a shot at Russ and all of that. Dave and I talked a lot about that. Well, we'll get in. Here's what Pete said about it. In case you guys missed this, a lot of people took this as a bit of a veiled shot at Russell.
He's getting everything he can get out of Shane. That's a really important part of it. Shane helps him all the way through to the, to the 15-second point, because they're not helping him. They're just communicating to get it done. And there's this conversation that goes on. And so they work it out. And Gino's taking advantage of all of that. If you notice, Gino's going off the wristband, and that's a big help. It's smoothed things out, sped things up, cleaned things up. And that's part of it too. And we never did that before. There was resistance to that. So we didn't do that before.
Yeah. Now, is that a shot? I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. I don't really know. And Dave and I talked a lot about this, especially with Russell and his profile and his stature with his team, and Bobby Wagner, same thing. Dave said it yesterday. He felt like they were running a defense to sort of suit Bobby, in terms of what they were asking the guys in front of him to do and allow him to go make the tackles and do all of that, whereas it wasn't really beneficial overall, but it's sort of catering to a superstar. That was your highest paid, biggest profile guy on defense. Russ is your highest paid, biggest profile guy on offense. They sort of earned that deference, if you will, with year after year of elite level play, frankly. I mean, they sort of earned that trust from a coaching staff to say, okay, Bobby, this is what you like. Okay, we'll do this. This is how we maximize your talent. Russ, this is how you want to do it. We need to maximize your talent. I think that's true in any situation. I don't think that's unique to Bobby and Russ.
No, not at all. I mean, how many times do you think Peyton Manning actually listened to his offensive coordinator? I don't even know who the offensive coordinator.
Say,
you could have told me someone was the offensive coordinator for the Colts, and I would have said, okay, but really, Peyton Manning was the offensive coordinator. So, yeah, you build up that cachet, and for Shane Waldron last year coming in, he did not come into the situation thinking, well, this guy's only going to be here 1 year. Russell Wilson's going to get traded. No, he had to come in with a little bit of deference, and when you have the established franchise quarterback, you're going to allow him to have some leeway. So that's a commonality. I think it's just funny that it was a straight up comparison. Yes, Geno is going off what he has been told, and he's not deviating from it because he hasn't built up that trust yet. He came in, had to earn the job. He's playing within the system. It is just a straight compare and contrast. But of course, and it's fun. It gets blown out of proportion, gives you something to talk about. It has been blown into something more of like, well, this is a continuing feud, and now Pete Carroll is finding ways to get in subtle jabs at Russell Wilson.
Maybe he is. I don't know. I don't know Pete's motivation. Maybe it is. If that's what he wants to do, so be it. Colin Cowherd, talking about this, said Pete is feeling really good about things right now.
Pete took another kind of jab at Russell Wilson after they had another victory. He said, Geno Smith's going off the wristband, big help. Smooth things out, sped things up, clean things up. We never did that before. There was a resistance to do that, so we didn't do it before. They're feeling themselves. I will say this, though, is that the NFL is a copycat league. So there's been mixed results on ditching a star quarterback. Detroit traded Stafford. They're not the same team. New England lost Brady. They're not the same team. Atlanta moved off Matt Ryan. They were bad last several years. They're not great now. And Seattle moved off Russell Wilson, got a boatload of picks, and they're way better.
All right. So he took it as a jab. He took it as a shot. And that it sort of Pete is very calculated. He knows what he's saying. He knows how that's going to be picked up. He knows how that's going to be perceived by some, and whether he, you know, that's how he meant it or not. Who cares? Who cares? I mean, if he wants to take a shot, Pete. Help yourself.
You don't think it's fun? It adds to it. It adds to the little back and forth, the pull together of these two teams, that they're still intertwined, that the Seahawks have the Broncos pick, so we can't really separate and extricate ourselves from Russell Wilson, and he knows that as well. Denver media keeps bringing it up. Russell Wilson was asked about it today, so the reason that it's still kind of a talking point. I think he had a response.
All right, so Russ was asked. I haven't heard this yet. So here's what he had to say about Pete's wristband comment.
I don't know exactly what he said, but I think, you know, won a lot of games there without one on the wrist. But, you know, and I didn't know winning or losing mattered if you wore a wristband or not. But I think that, I do whatever it takes to make sure that we're rolling and moving and everything else. The few times I've definitely won wristband, depending on the game plan and what we have called and all that stuff. But Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what he's supposed to say there. He's right. They won a whole lot of games without him wearing a wristband. So what's the answer? I know it's fashionable and it's cool now. The dog pile on Russ and everybody's doing it. It's very safe now. Everybody can say what they want and jump on board. And okay. You know, I never heard it brought up before. We had a lot of issues, you know, getting plays in before. I don't know if that was because he wasn't wearing a wristband. That's the implication with this comment now, is that, well, that was the whole problem this whole time. Well, if it was, why wasn't it a topic of conversation back then? Was it, you know, couldn't that have been brought up? Couldn't that have been something that was sort of, you know, brought up to put the heat on Russ to, hey, man, we can't keep wasting timeouts because we can't get the play in because you don't have a wristband. If that was the problem, why wouldn't that have been more of a topic back then? I don't know. I don't know what was going on behind closed doors, what the resistance was to it, if he's worn. I was like, we talked about when this first came out, I was like, man, I never paid attention until that comment came out that there was resistance to it before. I'm like, huh, I guess he didn't wear a wristband. It's not anything I ever pay attention. I don't know. I couldn't tell you who does and who doesn't, you know, going through the league. I can't think of, does Brady wears one, I think. Does Rodgers? I don't think Rodgers wears one.
Yeah,
I don't
listen if he did. So.
No, I don't know. I don't know. I'm sure it's unique to each guy out there. But the reality was, and he was right, they won a lot of games. If he wasn't wearing it that whole time, he did pretty well without it. So is that the reason they lost? Because all of a sudden it became a problem? I don't know. How did they win all those games? How did they win a Super Bowl? How did they get to the playoffs every year without the wristband? But now that's being deemed the reason there were these issues. How come it wasn't an issue before that?
No, I don't think it's an issue at all. I think it's interesting that it keeps getting brought up on the other side as well. My curiosity would be why the Denver media found that comment and brought it up to Russell Wilson. So here, we can certainly make conjecture, and from a national perspective, yeah, it's easy.
You're wondering why the Denver media found it?
Why did they bring it up to Russell Wilson? Yeah,
well,
so you think it was a shot?
Yeah, I think if you're a writer and you're trying to get clicks or create a headline, that's low-hanging fruit right there. Whether Pete meant it that way or not, if you're a writer and the writers aren't the ones who write the headlines, by the way. There's somebody else that does that. The headline writers, they're going to see that and go, oh, gold.
But now you understand why it keeps getting brought up. So I think it's going to happen probably, the rest of the year? And so people have to get used to that, because we were getting some texts now as well. Like, why is this still a big deal? Why do people keep talking about Russell Wilson? Well, because it keeps getting circulated every single time Pete Carroll says something that's taken as a shot, or Russell Wilson says something. It's then echoed back. It's almost like high school, right? Like, hey, this person said this about you. What do you think? And then telephone style back. So that's why it keeps getting brought about. I just think the core of that statement is very interesting, because you're right. You don't often think about the wristband, but the fact that you go dial back to what Pete Carroll was trying to say about Shane Waldron and Geno Smith, they are working so well together. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure we could have seen that coming, certainly out of this offseason, certainly out of training camp. After those preseason games, there was no flow. There was really no continuity to the offense. So that's the big takeaway there, is that what this guy was brought in to do, Shane Waldron, he was pretty criticized last year. I mean, we sat here and said, well, what's this offense? Shane Waldron was brought in to make this offense better. We're not seeing it. Why aren't we? So now the fact that it is working so well, I think that's just a good indication to the fact that that they are working together. And, oh, I think our guest is here. Sorry, just to interrupt there. So it looks like Jim Haslett might be arriving soon. But I think that's the point of the context of Shane Waldron is a good offensive coordinator. I want to give him credit for that. I guess he was kind of dragged through the mud a little bit last year.
Well, everybody was. I mean, Ken Norton was. The defense was atrocious. It had been atrocious for a couple of years. So, yeah, I mean, I think failure will provide those opportunities to point fingers and go, well, it's because of this, because of that, because of that, because of that. And I'm not absolving Russ of anything. I don't know what was going on behind closed doors, what he was saying, what they wanted, what he wanted, you know, how much friction was there truly, or, you know, how much of a difference was there in the offense they wanted to run versus what he wanted to run and how they wanted to do. Who knows? You know, we hear whispers and some are just rumor. I have no idea. What I do know is the team is performing decidedly better than anybody thought they would. And, you know, the we talked about it before. The national prediction for this team was 5 wins. And I said 5 or 6. I was in the majority. I mean, it was almost a consensus. There were no talking heads out there going, hey, don't sleep on the Seattle team. I'll tell you what, Geno Smith is primed for a MVP year. This is going to be a playoff team. Nobody was saying that. You didn't hear a single person out there on NFL Network or NFL Live on ESPN saying anything of the sort. So it's a massive pleasant surprise, and whatever is creating it, keep doing that. If it's wearing the wristband, then wear the wristband. Just like they did with Russell, I think they're going to do whatever makes Geno go. Whatever you need to do to make him go and be as efficient and successful as possible, that's what you're going to do. You're going to call the plays that suit him. You're going to call the plays that suit his skill set. You're not going to try to get him to do things that he doesn't do well. So that's what you do. That's what you did with Russell. That's what you did with Bobby. And that's what you'll do with Geno.
It's the power of the wristband. It must just have magic plays on it, obviously.
I don't know.
Clearly, whatever is on the wristband, it just says, this is the play to beat the defense, do that, and it's working.
Yeah, I think if you wear the wristband, you win. If you don't, you lose. I think that's the lesson here.
It's a power source kind of thing. Matt Nelson can chime in on that in a second, but no. No, I'm not dragging you into this.
It's absolutely one of those.
Right, I was going to make a Marvel comparison to you over there, but didn't want to throw you off your game there.
Matt Panic thought you were asking him something about sports. He's like, I don't have an opinion on this. Are you pro or con wristband? Where are you at?
Oh, big fan of wristbands. They're great. Live strong, all that kind of stuff.
There you go.
See, wristbands have never been seen as a bad thing.
Yeah.
Maybe if you have too many of them.
Yeah. I don't. Just having Matt talk sports makes me happy. It just fills me full of joy. One more. We had Mark Schlereth on yesterday, and, you know, he talked about this, and we've certainly obviously had more than a few conversations with him about Russell Wilson because he's out there in Denver, and he's talking about the fact that, you know, this is sort of a victory lap for Pete Carroll right now.
He's taking a victory lap every chance he can.
There's absolutely no question, but you know what, he had to do the opposite for 10 years or 8 years or whatever it was that you know, when Russell Wilson became Russell Wilson. And so now he feels vindicated. And listen, human nature to it. Don't you when you make a correct prediction, don't you want to take a little victory lap?
I know the part of you that always is honest by saying, I'm a good loser, I'm a terrible winner.
Yep.
That's Pete. That's Pete.
100%. Yeah.
That's Pete.
Pete's a good loser and a terrible winner. I don't know that Pete's a terrible winner.
That's kind of what Colin Cowherd was asserting, right?
Yeah, he said Pete's feeling himself or whatever. He said, I think, listen, Pete took a lot of heat, not just nationally. He was getting it here locally. We were getting texts every day. And I'm sure some of the people that are texting and praising him now are some of the ones that said they're never going to win with Pete. He's too old. Games passed him by. You're not going to win with John Schneider. Well, we saw it. There was nothing unique about those comments because they were happening so often. So, you know, and Pete's not a stranger to that. He hears that stuff, whether he admits it publicly or not. I don't blame him for feeling vindicated. And same with John Schneider. I mean, they had some drafts that didn't look great and some of these guys not panning out. He gets ripped for that. Pete Carroll, they're not winning. What's going on with this defense? What are you doing? He's getting ripped. So, yeah, that's human nature to feel vindicated. I don't think he's rubbing it in anybody's face. If he is, he's doing it sort of that passive-aggressive little shot, like a little resistance to it in the past, and he moves on. He's not leaning on it. I think it's fine. I don't have any issues with what Pete's doing at this point. If they look at him as a poor winner, all right. I'm assuming he'll be just fine with that. All right, let's take two.
The Mariners just made four roster moves, adding pitchers Gabe Spire and Easton McGee from the Royals and Red Sox, while Ryan Brohrucki and Casey Sadler have cleared waivers and elected free agency.
Couldn't tell you a thing about McGee or Spire. We'll see what that means. A little surprised about Casey Sadler. We'll see what happens there. He clears waivers, so he's free to go where he'd like. Brohrucki, even, he was, you know, when he was healthy, he was a guy who contributed well. So a little surprising that you know, they didn't make an attempt, and maybe they still will to bring these guys back into the fold. But we'll see how this roster shakes out.
The Sadler move just jumped out at me. Otherwise, sure, not to diminish those guys who are all professional baseball players. But the two pitchers, don't know anything about them, don't know what role they could have. But that was a guy in 2021 who was your key setup man. He set a record. He had a 0.67 ERA. He had 29 straight scoreless appearances. Mm-hmm. And he had the terrible season-ending injury before this year. But you kind of just assumed, all right, Casey Sadler will be back. He's going to add another arm to that potent bullpen. And it must mean that the Mariners feel pretty confident about what they have in their bullpen. And we'll see what that means for Sadler. Tough to just see him go like that, because you kind of thought he'd be back and have another key role in this team moving forward.
The Kraken extended their record win streak to five straight after a 5-1 win over the Predators last night. They have a big opportunity to keep that going with five more games at home over the next 2 weeks.
How about this team? Are they, and I texted you last night, are the Predators just trash or the Kraken better than competent? Are they verging on pretty good? Pretty good team? I don't know.
At this point, you have to say they're pretty good. I mean, five wins in a row is good. The Predators, we'll see what they have. They're not much so far. They're 5-7-1. They just have 11 points. But when the Kraken are up towards the top,
don't try to qualify their success.
No, but you asked me if they were good or bad. The Predators aren't good, but the Kraken are most certainly good. Anytime you can score four goals in a period, especially right out of the gate,
four
goals in the first.
Early.
Yeah, I missed the first goal. It was still bemoaning the Lightning loss, and then all of a sudden, it was 1-0 Kraken. And luckily, I paid attention for the rest of the first period. But when you score four goals like that, I mean, you didn't see that explosiveness and the firepower out of that offense last year. And who knows, the injury to Philip Grubauer might have been the best thing to happen to them.
Yeah,
that's crazy to say, but their goaltending has vastly improved since.
Predators goalie had no idea what was happening.
No.
It was just rapid fire. He was under siege. He had no idea.
Let's maybe we'll fit in a question to Morosi. Or he'll probably bring it up unprompted because they've been that good.
All right, Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/cyberknife prostate. The XFL is back again, and we got Seattle head coach Jim Haslett joining us in studio. That's coming your way next. It's Wyman and Bob with Lefko in for Wyman today. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports Station on 710, and it is a pleasure to have this man in studio with us. For those of you watching on the stream right now, he is the new head coach of the Seattle Sea Dragons of the XFL. I'm talking about head coach Jim Haslett with us. How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Great. If we can get you up on the mic just a little bit, that'd be perfect. Good to have you here, and welcome to Seattle.
Yeah, this is awesome. We were down in Dallas. I had the whole staff down in Dallas, and we got together and kind of finalizing the playbook and everything, and then we flew up here, and it's awesome to be here. I was up in this area this off season. I went up to Vancouver and went around, and you know, it's kind of interesting up there. So
you got here when the weather was nice and it was warm.
Yeah, it was freezing.
Oh, was it?
It was freezing.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I thought you were here during the summer.
No, it was. But we had a great time.
All right. Well, tell us about how this process began, because you know, we had the XFL. People were around here were excited. They had pretty good attendance, and everybody was starting to buy in. Then the pandemic happens. It goes away. It's back now. You're the head coach. When did that process begin with you?
Well, here, and I don't know all the detail of that details, but I actually been coaching for almost 34 years.
Certainly.
I played 10 years.
Yeah.
And my wife wanted to retire because I have a son that coaches with the Cowboys. And I got two daughters. One lives in Boston. One lives in Chicago. One works for DraftKings.
Okay.
So I got family. I got kids everywhere. She wanted to retire, and so I was coaching the linebackers with the Titans, with Mike Rabel, who I drafted in Pittsburgh. And so I kind of went along with it. We'll go travel and do a little bit. Well, it lasted about a month. I got offered the job from with the Sea Dragons, and I took it. So
couldn't get away.
So that's what all my buddies did. My friends said that too. What you just can't, you can't relax. So, but I'm excited. I'm excited about the opportunity. I'm excited about Seattle. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you watch all the thing that's going on with all the other sports. I mean, I'm fired up for the Seahawks because of Pete. Because I, you know, Pete was my secondary coach when I played in Buffalo.
Right.
And I've known Coach Carroll for a long time. The Mariners go the first time they go to the playoffs in 21 years, and they got their Kraken, who I love watching them, but I couldn't remember the name half the time. And then obviously, you know, the women's basketball is.
Yeah,
six or seven champions, or whatever it is. So I'm excited about being a part of it, and hopefully we can do the same thing in the XFL.
What was it about being a head coach that attracted you? I'm sure once that gets in your system, you can never really get rid of it. But what are you really looking forward to about leading a program again?
Well, you know what I was more excited about? Randy Mueller is going to be the they call him director of operations, but he's going to run the thing. So he's. And him and I worked together with the Saints our first year, and he was executive of the year. I was coach of the year. So I was kind of fired up the opportunity to work with him. And then to get the coaches that I got on the staff, I was excited about that. June Jones is going to run the offense. Last time they did it, he was number one in the league in offense. They were undefeated. I don't know how he didn't get a head coaching job out of it, but – I'm excited about him. Ron Zook's going to run the defense. So we got a good nucleus of older coaches. I got some young coaches and guys I've been around. And so we're going to have fun doing it. They're all business. We like I said, we tried to go out the other day. I tried to get them to go out and eat. They don't want to eat. They just want to sit there and watch tape and talk football. So, but it'll be fun. Obviously, with June, you'll see the ball thrown a lot. You know, he'll probably throw it 60, 70 times a game, which is fine.
Fans love that.
Be fun. Yeah, they'll like it. They'll love the offense.
How much do you feel like maybe you've changed as a head coach? I mean, I think most people know you from your time with the Saints. You were running the show out there. You've been a coordinator with other teams in different, you know, capacities with the Rams and the Titans, as you just mentioned. But how much do you think maybe you've evolved now? You're like, is there anything you look at with the Saints and go, okay, when I did this, that was great, or I'm not going to do that again in this situation?
Yeah, I think this is a learning process. Being a head coach, you know, and learn the things that you would do and you wouldn't do, I think will be more aggressive in this league. And I love some of the roles and the way they got it. Like if you score a touchdown, you have the ability to go for one, two, or three. There's no kick. And so
you're going to go for three every time.
Yeah, probably, but no one else. I mean, I don't know how many times we're going to punt. And if we're at midfield – and you punt a ball and it goes in the end zone or it goes out of bounds, they get the ball at the 35. For 10 yards, go for it.
Yeah.
You know, and you're going to have a smart quarterback because he can't take sacks. He's going to have to know the situation. So I'm kind of excited. I'm excited about we got a couple quarterbacks. I can't tell you who right now, but we got a couple quarterbacks. I love them. They both played in the NFL. One actually started a bunch of games last year, and I think he's going to have a chance to be a really good player. I think we got a good handle on what we're looking for, you know, on offense and defense. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be the draft will be fun, practices, all that. Like I said, the coaches are businesslike, but
can't even get them to eat. All they want to do is watch film.
That's all they wanted to do. They would drive me crazy yesterday, but it's a good group, and we'll have fun, and hopefully win a lot of games, and you know, hopefully we can do what everybody else in this town has done, you know, winning a lot of games.
Well, that's a heck of a tease, by the way. You just dropped all the listeners that there's an NFL, two NFL caliber quarterbacks, right, on this roster. So stay tuned for that. What is the timeline? I don't know if you can announce all the specifics yet, but when people learn of the players, when you guys will be able to kind of announce who's on the team.
I think they're going
to
announce the quarterbacks next week.
Okay.
I'm almost sure of that. And then the draft is next week. And Vegas is the first draft. We already had the quarterback draft, but this will be the draft of all the skilled players, you know, and then the offense, defensive line, all that. And then what they're going to do in January, have another draft for guys that want to play that just came out of the NFL, those type of guys. So this will be interesting next week. It's going to be different. It's a It's drafted by position, so it's going to be like the front seven. Mm-hmm. You'll have a draft. Then you'll have a draft for the back end, receivers, offensive line, skill players. It would be receivers and running backs, excuse me. So I'm fired up about it. And I think Randy's one of the best I've ever been around. And I look forward. He was on a team that was, you know, they were undefeated last time before the COVID hit. So hopefully we can do that.
So quickly, we were hitting a break here, but just as a head coach, you know the deal. Things go well, you're a genius. Things don't go well, you don't know what you're doing out there.
Even worse nowadays with social media. Right,
yeah.
Because I read all that stuff, too, and I think it's funny. I'm not 30 years old anymore, and I'm playing, so I don't get all hyped up about it. But I do get a kick out of social media. One minute, you're the greatest thing in the world. Next minute, you're just the worst coach in the world.
Yeah. There's a lot of unemployed coaches on Twitter, apparently. They'll tell you how you should be doing things. We'll get into more about what people can expect that's coming up. We've got the draft coming up, as you talked about. Season opens February 18th. We'll get into that. Head coach Jim Haslett of your Seattle Sea Dragons, your XFL franchise, in studio with us here. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. We've got the head coach of the Seattle Sea Dragons, your XFL franchise, Jim Haslett, in studio with us. Pleasure to have him here. And, you know, talking about what's to come. How do you feel like this is happening quickly? Everything's scattered. Do you feel like, okay, I'm set up. I'm ready to go. I've got my ducks in a row.
Well, we just had a couple days meetings. It felt like we needed like 2 months. So
yeah,
it's been hectic. We've been doing Zoom meetings because I got coaches spread out over the country.
Okay,
we've been getting together that way. But it's obviously a lot different when you're together and you got the players there and you can start working. But so everybody's excited about that opportunity. That's down the road here, you know, coming soon. But I think we're ready. We'll be ready for it. We'll be ready when they put the balls down, when they display them, when they show them next week or whatever. Yeah, our guys will be ready to go. It's a really good coaching staff for these young kids that want to play and have another opportunity to play in the NFL. And that's kind of what I sell them on. When I talk to a player that's out there right now, I talk to a bunch of them, and I'll tell them it's the best situation, better than USFL, better than the Canadian League, to get your opportunity to play in the NFL again, if that's what your goal is. And that's what I'm here for, to help a young guy. I did this once before, my first year coaching ever, and in the pro level. I just got done playing, and I coached with the Sacramento Surge, we were the champions. But I had two players in particular. We had a bunch of them, but I had two players in particular who were really good. That in college, this one player was a linebacker. We made a defensive lineman. He's the all-time sack leader with the Seahawks, Mike Sinclair. All right, so we had him. And I had Mike Jones, who was a fullback at Tennessee State. We turned into a linebacker, played with the Rams, who made the game-winning tackle for the Super Bowl. So that's the kind of things that we're looking forward to doing, taking some of these guys that maybe missed out an opportunity to play in the NFL for whatever reason. Maybe they're not in the right position. They're not with the right team. I think it's a unique year because last year, and usually there's about 365 players come out in the draft, 120 make it, about 120 get on a practice squad, and there's 120 out in the street looking for jobs. Well, last year, because of COVID, nobody came out. So there was 880-some players came out this year. Well, there's an abundance of good players out in the street that can't get opportunities or can't get jobs. You ever watch NFL football right now?
Yeah,
it's some ugly ball. I'm trying to recruit. I'm trying to get guys to come play that I feel have an opportunity to impact the NFL with whatever, as a backup, practice squad, whatever, and have an opportunity to make money, whatever their goal is. I just want guys that love football and guys that want to play for the reason because they like football. I don't want guys to say, I don't want to play for the money. Well, go play somewhere else. You're not going to play with us. I want guys that want to go out and practice, play hard, and try to get their goal, whatever that goal is. It's either to play in the NFL, or some guys I talk to just say, I just want to play. I'm going to play as long as I can before I start my whatever I'm going to do in life.
Start real.
Yeah,
your real job.
Your real job.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what the NFL, and that's what kind of it is anyways. You play 4 or 5 years, and not too many guys make it past that.
Mm-hmm.
Go make as much money as you can, have fun, do your thing, and then go on into your real life and have your family and everything else going on. So I'm excited about it. I think we're going to give if we can get the guys that we're talking about, we'll have a good opportunity. They're going to showcase themselves, and I think a lot of these guys will get picked up.
Yeah, I think you've captured the passion of football out here pretty well. Were you ever out here when you were coaching? Did you experience that from the road perspective?
Yeah, you can't hear. Yeah,
right.
There's one, I'll never forget this one time. I was coaching, and I looked up, and there wasn't, I don't think the Seahawks were real good that year, and they didn't, there was only about 35,000 in the stands, and I couldn't hear. It was so loud.
Yeah.
So,
they take pride in their noise out here.
Oh, they do a great job. And the stadium's kind of built for it. And
yeah.
The fans are, you know, they love football. So
how much are you looking forward to being on the right side of that and getting to experience that when they cheer for you?
Yeah, that's good. I'm excited about it. I'm excited about the whole opportunity. I'm excited about the draft, getting the players that we want that fits what we're going to try to do. And hopefully, like I said, you got so much success around here with the other sports clubs that we can be a part of that.
Is it, you talked about your coaches looking at film. I'm assuming you've looked at a bunch of film as well and all of the players that are available out there that you talked about. Is it easy for coaching staffs at the pro level to miss guys that are out there because there's so many that you can't see everybody?
I think this is one of these years that there are players out there that should play. There's so many receivers out there right now. You know, and every NFL club has 5 or 6, but there's so many of them that just couldn't get drafted or couldn't get signed because of the abundance of numbers. That there was 880 players that qualified for the draft this year. Mm-hmm. There's really good, some really good players. I think if you get this year, especially if they can showcase themselves, that they'll have an opportunity to go and play at the next level.
So that would be huge for you to lose players each year to the NFL. I mean,
hope we lose every one of them.
That you got to rebuild starting the next season.
Yeah, but you
season.
Know what? That's what that's what you're in it for, to help these guys, help them achieve their goal, whatever that goal is. I talked to a guy the other day. He says, "I just want to play. I like playing. I want to play." And he's a good player, and he doesn't care if it's the NFL. He just wants to play, and so. You like to have guys like that that like football because it's not an easy sport, obviously.
Right.
It's a grind, and it's hard, and you got to practice, and you got to spend time, and you got to do all the right things if you want to be successful. And he's all in on it. So I get fired up when I talk to the players. I really get fired up. So it's going to be a good opportunity for a lot of them. And the other thing that this league has going for it is it's going to start in January, play February, March, April. Then the players that have success and do what they're supposed to do, they walk right into an off-season program in the NFL.
Mm.
Unlike the other leagues, they're still playing, and they get beat up, and the season's over. All right, you go to the NFL for 2 weeks, and then this is a great opportunity for guys just because of the time frame also.
Well, I'm glad we're getting you here first. It sounds like you have a busy day the rest of the day. Want to throw that out there. So tonight – you're going to be down, and that's a chance to meet you, right? Everyone can come out and greet you at Hatback, a little town hall forum with our colleague and host of Bump and Stacey. Stacey Ross is hosting it. 6 to 8 down at Hatback. What's going on there? Just going to take questions, going to talk about this team some more, and what, meet the fans, I guess?
Yeah, we're going to take some questions. Hopefully I can answer them honestly.
Not sure what you're allowed to say yet, huh?
Yeah, I get reprimanded every time I get on the radio or something. So I always say,
all right,
we won't
get him in trouble. Sorry, guys.
It's a good chance. You know, I got a good chance to meet everybody and the fans, and it's good for me to come back and see the city and everything. Mm-hmm. But it's exciting, an opportunity. Like I said, it's a whirlwind. We just left Dallas. We came up here, and I'm going to leave tomorrow. I got to go back to Florida, and I'm going to come back to Vegas in 3 days and do the draft. And so it's we get settled in, it'll be a lot better.
Now, we've talked about your players going to the NFL. That's the goal for a lot of them. Yeah. Would you ever want to go back to the NFL?
You know what? I just left it on my own. And, you know, it's Probably no. I think my wife would kill me. But this is a really good situation for a lot of coaches too. You coach 4 months and then you get a load up and get another load of players and try to do the same thing with them. So if I've been doing it for a long time, I played 10 years, coaching 30 some years. It's that's
you feel like you've done enough.
Yeah, that's good. But I do like football and I like. That's what my wife says. There's anything that makes you happy. But, no, it's I like being around. I like just the structure, starting something new. Mm-hmm. I like putting it together. I like being around the coaches. You know, you talk football. What can we do to make it better and all that? The good thing about, like I said, our staff is this good young – it's a mix. Young guys, but some really good coaches on the – they're running the offense and defense and – I think it'll be fun to watch.
I forgot to mention giveaways as well. If you're down there tonight, who doesn't like free stuff? Giveaways.
Again?
Yeah. 6 to 8 at Hatback tonight. We know that's a fun spot. You were out there hosting all the Mariners
stuff.
Great food, great giveaways. Stacy Ross is hosting the town hall and forum with head coach Jim Haslett of your Seattle Sea Dragons. So you can ask him questions. You can get stuff. Who doesn't want to go down there? And it's a nice night, too. It's not raining.
Yeah.
Get on down there.
Yeah, just bundle up. Little chilly, but yeah.
It's beautiful weather. It's no rain.
Perfect. So get out to Hatback tonight. You can meet the head coach. Ask him questions. Do his best to be honest and not get himself in trouble with anybody out there. Coach, great to have you in here. Excited for the team. Excited for the season. And look forward to talking to you throughout the season.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, and hopefully, like I said, we're going to have a great season. I'm excited about it, and you'll be surprised what they see.
So. Well, I like the aggressive attitude that he's going to go for three every time. That's what's going to happen.
They're going to throw it a lot.
Be honest
with
you, last time I did a study on it, on like what teams went for 1, 2, and 3. Teams that went for 1, they were about 65% or 75%. Teams went for 2 were like 58%. Teams went for 3 were 37%. But if you add them all together, they all equaled out. June, who was the head coach before, went for 3 every single time. So that kind of
tells
you what
he's
going to tell me doing.
It's going to be exciting. Coach, thanks so much. It's great to have you in here.
Appreciate you having me.
There you go. Jim Haslett, head coach of your Seattle Sea Dragons. Again, he'll be at Hatback Bar and Grill tonight right across from T-Mobile Park, 6 o'clock tonight. Giveaways happening. Great food. Go out there. Say hello to the coach. If you've got questions, he'll answer those as well. Coming up, there are two paths the Mariners could take to free agency, which begins tomorrow. We're going to get into those next. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.